this the one and only time when the Rebel Crickhopper will actually catch a fish?
Sometimes I just stand there and get bit by like 3 pythons.
Don't you even dare come at me with fruit, watermelon, and ceviche.
Maybe it was the woo-hoo I held when the U.S. Customs agent swept his hands through my netherworld.
Good morning, degenerate anglers. Welcome to Bent, the fishing podcast that has grand ambitions to one day get all its hair and makeup sponsorships from Great Clips. I'm Joe Cermelli.
I'm Miles Nolte, and dude, I think we can aim higher. Supercuts, all the way.
And a supercut costs only $6. But believe me, there's no secret. Anyone can do it. Don't ask me why they don't.
So just to get this straight, I think that was old advertising, but the angle there was that the haircutting service they offered, it requires no skill at all and can be performed by anyone, by any human.
I think that's what they were going for.
That's what Flobies were for, weren't they?
It sucks as it cuts.
So yeah, exactly. But,
what do you expect, man? I mean, the haircuts there cost $6, which is probably why my mom took me to Supercuts until I got to junior high, at which point I refused to get any haircuts at all anymore so I could grow out my sweet, sweet locks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I am fairly certain you were very proud of those locks back in the day.
We just washed the hair. You know, I work on my hair a long time, and you hit it. He hits my hair.
I've actually got a photo of you, which you sent me from your teen years to prove it. And it's hilarious, dude.
I did send you that. I may regret it. And it honestly, if that picture had anything to do with fishing, it would probably be our greatest awkward photo of all time.
Totally. Totally. See, I never had long hair, but it was bleached blonde for a
Ooh,
time.
Frosted?
It wasn't frosted. It wasn't frosted. Like, I did it with the stuff, but I left it on way too long. And then you convince yourself, like, it looks cool. This was, like the end of my punk, like, end of high school.
Yeah.
But, see, I'm not sending you any of those photos because I know better.
You're smarter than me.
Right. Because, yeah. I mean, in the photo that you sent me, you are wearing a fish hook necklace, like a big, thick, tribal fish hook. Like, I think that's also been used on certain Salt Life apparel. One of those. Everybody knows what I'm talking about,
too. It has been, and I did wear one of those for a time.
And you're playing the bongos shirtless.
Yeah, yes, also true. I'd moved out of the metal punk era, and I was into a reggae phase.
I do not sip the coke, I only smoke. I do not sip the coke, I only smoke. I do not sip the coke.
See, and whatever you just played, that's like real reggae. That's like, I was listening to like Jimmy Cliff, and that's like poser
Doesn't
reggae.
Doesn't count.
Right, no. Exactly. But anyway, look, regardless, I will make sure to post that photo up on Instagram today so everyone can bask in your 18-year-old glory. But in the meantime, a big announcement today. Listen up. Bent has got a great new friend.
It's true, we do. This podcast is brought to you by the number 13.
Got the number 13 tattooed on my neck.
Ah, see, now while I appreciate the reference there, and that was spot on, I prefer the Danzig version.
Got a number 13 tattooed on my neck.
Danzig over Cash. You're going Danzig over Cash, seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Danzig does Elvis better than Elvis, too, in my opinion. Look that one up.
I seriously cannot disagree with you more than I do, but it doesn't matter. It's not the point. The point I'm trying to make is that we're proud to announce that we've teamed up with 13 Fishing to bring all of you this show every single week.
Yes, and I know a lot of you already know 13. They make fine rods, reels, and baits for degenerate anglers. Whether you embrace the underappreciated genius of Danzig or follow the conformist Hollywood polished Joaquin Phoenix style of music and fishing.
Thank you for working 1994's worst insult into that. Mm-hmm. Such a conformist, dude.
Conformist.
But 13 Fishing, however, is not. They make unique, well thought out badass gear to cover almost all your fish needs. And in fact, you can see the goods in action right now on our YouTube channel, because episode 2 of Joe's new show, B-Side Fishing, is live, coming in hot from the swamps of Jersey.
Yep, that's true. We did get kind of swampy this week, but last week I did a little Key West charter trip without ever leaving the confines of my home state of Jersey. So I hope nobody, if you still haven't seen that, like, get with it. And I'll tell you what, I asked some 13 spinning rods to take on fish they were probably not designed to handle in that episode, but I mean, they crushed it. They held up very nicely. Anyway, you're going to be seeing and hearing from 13 regularly, and we could not be happier, truly, to be working with them. I've actually been fishing a ton of their stuff since last summer, and a lot of people have asked me about it, and I've told them all it has been kicking some serious ass.
Yeah, likewise.
It's good stuff.
Likewise. Yeah. I've been doing the same, and it's performed really, really well.
Yep. But the Cash Danzig debate actually reminds me of something you brought up a few episodes ago. In the end of the line, you did about the Pistol Pete. You talked about how fly fishing went from being something that many anglers did because it was the most effective way to fish small lures to a kind of like countercultural rebellious statement in the 70s and 80s to an elitist status symbol in the 90s and 2000s. And that got me thinking about fishing sort of like more broadly. What does identifying as an angler mean in 2021? Like, what are the cultural stereotypes about fishing these days?
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. I feel like on a gut level, I feel like fishing is getting younger and in some ways cooler than when we were kids, you know, but it's like, I don't have anything to back that up. It's pretty much anecdotal. Like, high school and college bass fishing clubs and tournaments seem to be everywhere in the last few years and grown really fast. And then you got all the short films with lots of dubstep drops that have made fishing seem more exciting than the days when it was just like, oh, I go out and get sunburned with grandpa and watch a bobber. Like, the representations I see of it are definitely trying to make it cooler, but that might just be me projecting and feeling hopeful, right? Because I hadn't thought about this till right now, but you really don't see fishing in mainstream media. Like, you know, we've talked about it in other places in our company, how hunting is portrayed in mainstream media, but I'm struggling to come up with examples of fishing, right? And that's usually how I gauge social attitudes about anything. Like, how does it look in a major movie or on a TV show? And I can't think of, like, has there been a major movie about fishing since Grumpy Old Men? Has that even happened?
Oh, several. 1997's Gone Fishing with Joe Pesci and Danny Glover.
Okay, movies people actually, have you watched that movie?
No, nor did I see 2008's Bait Shop with that redneck comic dude. Here's Your Sign. And Miley Cyrus's dad?
Okay, you're making my point, though. I haven't seen those either, so those don't count.
No, you're right. And how particular activities are represented in movies or on TV shows is sort of like the ultimate like litmus test of how our society views those activities and the people who partake in them. So fishing's absence, I guess, from the greater media landscape is telling. I mean, at least I think. I'm not totally sure what that's saying, you know?
I don't know either. I think, like, you could look at it as a positive thing, right? You could say that the fact that you don't see fishing splashed around mainstream media is good because we get to self-define, at least to some extent, right? Instead of being pigeonholed as like the redneck thing or the elitist thing or the counterculture thing. I don't know. We're figuring it. We get to figure out what that is for ourselves as our own culture. I don't know. It's an interesting question. And I think it leads me to wonder, because I genuinely don't know what is the broader cultural attitude about fishing and anglers right now? And I feel like I'm too close to it to answer it, right? I just know such a broad spectrum of people who identify as anglers. And for example, one good example would be our friend River Horse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he kind of defies simple classification. I've said for a long time now, I really hope he gets his own TV show one day.
Oh, me too.
Can you imagine?
I can't imagine. It'd be like, it would be like a much more serious version of Fishing with John, which I would love to see. But if that does ever happen, he'll probably get to, you know, too big to hang out with us. So we better enjoy our time with River Horse while we can, and get ourselves some sagely wisdom about long hair, fishing rods, and international travel.
Hey now. This is River Horse coming to you with some sagely wisdom. You remember the days when the passport was in your hand and you were heading out of the country to stick 'em? Well, me too. This is a little story called Strange Customs. And don't you worry, those days will be back soon. Legs are spread for the umpteenth time. There is nothing better to dim the post-coital afterglow of a road trip than an airport cop song and dance. Random? My ass. This is a shakedown. That's all there is to it. I'd warn the guys not to stand anywhere near me because it happens every time. They'd already made it through and were watching in the wings, laughing their asses off. Maybe it was the woo-hoo I held when the U.S. Customs agent swept his hands through my netherworld. His cheeks turned a light crimson, and then he got pissed. Not funny? It was to me. For some reason, airport cops love fly rods and surfboards. Having hair from my trucker cap to my tailbone is the kicker. It gives permission for individual screenings, pat downs, rub downs, and plenty of questions. In an airport these days, long hair is the gift that keeps on giving. When you call an airport cop on the carpet for yet another game of cat and very innocent mouse, they turn downright sheepish. In El Salvador, there is a traffic light security device that you must attempt to pass through. Green means go fish, red, forget it, strip search. I've attempted to get through that damn light 8 times and got red every time. 8 for 8. I see your feet stepping on the switch that triggers the light, I told the airport cop in Spanish. He looked away fast with a grin on his face. And now here in the Caribbean, the security agent looks down the barrel of every single one of my 8 weights. He takes the rods out, shakes the tube. I see the ever-sparkling shimmer and shine of the Caribbean sunlight streaming through the windows. I hold my arms wide for another pat-down. Oh, shit. He finds the secret stash in the breast pocket of my coat. He's got me. A peanut butter and strawberry jam sandwich. The backpack has been ransacked and rifled through. I've been asked my mother's maiden name, the city in which I was born. Even the reels have a few feet of line stripped out before they are placed back in the gray bin, let alone the long discussion about what is a river horse. Oh, I'm not worried about it. I have nothing to hide. I've always run clean and wild my entire life, never wanting to dim the light. If you can't find yourself higher than a kite from simply being on the water, then you are beyond lost. By the time I catch up to the rest of the guys, they already have a beer waiting on the counter for me. It tastes delicious. It tastes like freedom. I hope you enjoyed our little sagely wisdom story today. And remember, I know times are a little funky right now, but this world needs us to take care of each other. Be there for each other. There are wonderful days ahead. And we all know that fly fishermen and women, and especially tree-hugger hippie Cherokee Viking Texans, never get profiled at the airport. Nah.
So, dude, did you read his article, The Darkest Web?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The one about the illegal fishing scene in the Gulf of Mexico where he, like, straps on a Kevlar vest and embeds himself with the Texas game wardens trying to chase down the illegal commercial fishermen. I devoured that article, man.
Yeah. It was truly one of the best pieces of fish journalism I've read in a long time. It's kind of depressing, right? But it's just so well-written and just so engaging. Such an awesome piece.
The scene with the shark fins. Yeah. Anyway, you got to read it. It's free. Google The Darkest Web River Horse. You'll find it. It's worth 10 minutes of your time, especially if you like River Horse's style, which we do. He's unapologetically freaky and he's proud of it.
Yeah. He is. And judging by some of the submissions we get, so are many of you. So we're going to highlight one particular individual who lets his freak flag fly high. In this week's Awkward Moment in Angling, this is the part of the show where we break down fishing photos sent in by you listeners, because really, other than like Christmas cards or senior pictures, what genre of photography is more ripe for ridicule than fish pics?
Why don't you take a picture of a lifeguard?
I don't think I've ever found myself wondering what a fish fly freak might look like, or even contemplating that such a creature might exist. But once listener Andrew Potorsky sent us an email titled Lake St. Clair Fish Fly Freak Award Photo, I became immediately curious. Like, what's a fish fly? How exactly does it get freaky? I don't know.
I can answer the first part of the question, because in Michigan, fish fly is a common name for Hexagenia mayflies, the hex, which are, okay, you know the hex, which are large, which are large insects that emerge from the lakes and rivers of the upper Midwest every summer, sometimes in just insanely massive numbers. And the swarms, they're sometimes so huge that they show up on weather radar, like a snowstorm, so thick that they can cover streets and cause traffic to slide off the road.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know what we're talking about. So like for fish and anglers, both, the hex are, they're kind of a big deal.
Very much.
They're these inch-long bugs that live most of their lives burrowed in the substrate of lakes, ponds, and slow-moving rivers, where when they're down in there, they're pretty safe from predators. But when the conditions get just right, all the bugs at the same time swim to the surface right around dusk. They sprout wings. They hatch out of the water. They mate midair in these massive swarms and then lay their eggs back in the water and die. And that whole process takes less than 2 days. And during that window, birds and dragonflies and especially fish feast on all that easily available protein.
Yeah, hence the reason people call them fish flies in certain areas. Because
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. And I actually was once told it was lake walleye guys in Michigan or maybe Wisconsin. I don't know. But they coined that term fish flies. Because they'd be like, we ain't catching any walleyes right now because of them damn fish flies. Like, they didn't know what a hexagenia was, you know? And the whole thing is a nighttime game. Because, like you said, these bugs are nocturnal. So that's when the fish eat them. And then what happens is, theoretically, they eat them all night long. So they're full the next day and don't eat anything. So the walleye guys get up and can't catch walleye because they're full. And the hex hatch is one of the best times of year to get a crack at a really huge brown. Right, on a dry fly. The kind of fish that are usually hidden and really wary. It's kind of why it's such a big deal in Michigan, because you have those tight streams with all that deadfall. Those fish are tucked in throughout the day. But they'll come out and feed aggressively when those bugs emerge. And they're best known to trout fishermen, but just about every fish will eat them, including panfish, like I said, walleye, and bass. So that answers the first part of the question. We know what a fish fly is now, but to answer the second part, what is a fish fly freak? Which I have a hard time saying. Fish fly freak.
It's a tongue twister.
It doesn't roll right off the tongue. But to answer that, we got to go to the photo.
Right. And now I'm going to start by setting the scene. It's nighttime. And the freak in question is standing in front of a railing with a body of water in the background. He's well lit from above. And all that seems to indicate that he's standing under a large floodlight and dock fishing. And it seems he's having at least a little success, right? He's holding a very average largemouth in the standard largemouth lip grip. But I can't really tell how he's feeling about the catch or anything else, because his face is completely obscured.
Yes. And by obscured, you mean covered completely, top to bottom, by fish flies, right? And in this photo, like, Andrew has no eyes, no mouth, no. It is something out of a horror movie. And
it's true.
The Mothman prophecies comes to mind, even though I don't know if there's actually a scene like that. It's just what pops in there. Anyway, there's just one little slice of cheek showing, but that's about it. The rest is almost entirely hex mayflies. In fact, just about every exposed surface in the photo is covered in bugs, except the fish itself, which is strangely clean.
Yeah.
I don't quite get that. But even the background is just a blur of flying insects. The only physical attribute of Andrew that we can really make out is his beard, which is truly, it's impressive.
It is. It's
some impressive
beard.
Facial hair. It appears to at least be a foot long and Amazonian jungle thick. In this particular image, however, right? It also seems to have become like a tangled breeding ground for these giant bugs. They're making sweet love in his beard, I think.
They're just all over it. The photo alone, just the photo by itself is fantastic, yeah. Right? And we're not even making fun of it. It's just a great photo. But I think the backstory that Andrew sent us in an email just gives the whole thing another layer that I appreciate.
Totally.
He wrote, a hex hatch like this up in northern Michigan is what dreams are made of when you're going after trout. But fishing for warm water species with conventional gear during a hatch like this on Lake St. Clair can be a nightmare because the fish aren't hungry. At that time of my life, the only time I could get together with buddies to fish was during the evening, which happens to be when the fish flies, what we call these mayflies in this area, hatch and become incredibly dense. Anyway, it's extremely tough to catch anything during a crazy hatch like this on the lake, but I noticed a weird pocket of fish fly carcasses that collected under a particular light post. Bass and bluegill would occasionally rise to engulf mouthfuls of the spinners, and so I ended up tossing an unweighted single-tail grub, green pumpkin zoom fat Albert, into that pile and caught this small largy. Andrew also noted that that he does like to fly fish and he does target trout, which really just dials up the irony of this particular photo.
Yeah, I was going to say, once you get that context, I think the picture goes from just being odd to legitimately being funny, because there's poor dude in the middle of one of the most famous hatches in fishing, one that's known for bringing giant and elusive browns to hand. And he's holding a dinker bass and fishing with a green pumpkin soft plastic. The only thing that would make it funnier and more ironic is if he had like a push button reel, like a push button outfit, and that's what he was using. So, I mean, even though I can't see his face, I can imagine it. You know what I mean?
Yep. I've got a pretty good idea of what might be going on behind all those bugs and beard. And if you out there want to see what a fish fly freak actually looks like, check out Joe and my Instagram pages at JoeSirmelli138 and at WaterMiles.
Yeah, and if you have an awkward fishing photo you think is worthy of getting picked apart on this show, send it, please, to bent@themeateater.com.
I've never actually experienced a hex hatch in my life.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but me either, man. I've mouse fished in hex territory later in the summer.
Yeah.
But I've never been there like up in Michigan or anything for the hex, and I've interviewed tons of guides about it. I've written articles based on their info, but I've never actually gotten there myself. And I love night fishing. You think I would? No, yeah. I haven't.
It seems like something you would go do. So having never done it, I assume that it's like the salmon fly hatch out here, meaning it's cool, but it's also overrated. And to by that, I mean, there's so much hype, right?
Yeah.
That there's no way that it can ever live up to the expectations. A good example, you just said you've written about it, you've interviewed people about it, you've talked and talked and talked and talked about it. All these marquee hatches get all that attention. And so when people think they're going to go do it, they expect it to be the greatest experience, like this transcendent fishing experience. And yeah, there are lots of giant bugs. And yeah, just about everything eats them. But like Andrew explained in his email, there's so much food available in the middle of those events that a lot of times the fish are just gorged and they're full and they're not that easy to catch. So you get the hatch, but you don't necessarily catch the fish.
Yeah, and like you really hit the nail on the head there. It's I'd love to fish a hex hatch, right? But it's not like an insane bucket list item for me. Like I look at it like if I get there someday, I get there and that would be cool. But you make a good point. I feel the same way. When you interview people for these stories, you're hearing about it like in its most glorious form. And then if you, like, I know people who have gone to fish the hex hatch and they catch one trout in four nights of doing it. You know, it's the same thing with like the Cape Cod Canal. Come up here and crush them. But I know a lot of people who make that drive and catch two.
Yeah.
So I'd love to, but I don't know. Maybe it is overrated. I'll tell you what's not overrated though. Fish news.
Fish news.
That escalated quickly.
All right, so no particular direct shout-outs from me this week, although I do hope you guys enjoyed the second installment of B-Side Fishing this week, little pickerel fishing in the
Snot Rocket.
Down in the South Jersey Pine Barrens, which I think the bigger message of that one was proving As I said in the video, matter of fact, there is not an Olive Garden or Pizzeria Uno on every piece of open land in the state of New Jersey.
I thought the takeaway was don't show your friend your spots because they're gonna outfish you. I missed the point. I
did get crushed, but look, I'm about keeping it real, and I did not fake it. I got my ass handed to me on the fish front. But I hope you guys enjoyed that one. Now we pickled pickerel in that episode, which I got to tell you was delicious. That was new to me, and I thought it was terrific. Which is sort of a play on episode one, where we made ceviche. And just browsing through comments on the first episode, most of which were great and very positive. There was one dude though who just hammered me for my ceviche and was like, "Don't you even dare come at me with fruit, watermelon, and ceviche." And he's talking about beef bouillon cubes or some weird shit. So I'll look it up. I'll try it your way. You didn't have to be so rude about it. But apparently I don't know ceviche.
I mean, so. I've had fruit in my ceviche before, but I've never had watermelon. But I'm not saying it won't work. I don't know. You're already you're putting citrus juice in there. You can't tell me there's no fruit in ceviche when like one of the main ingredients is citrus juice. Exactly. So,
Exactly. And there was also a dude who commented, he was like, "Can anyone confirm that watermelon is good in ceviche?" And I got in there and I was like, "Well, I can confirm it, but I guess I don't really count." So
do I count?
Trust me.
Keep watching the B-sides. They're all that good. I'm telling you. For those of you who have not done so already, go sign up for the new fishing newsletter that we got.
Yes, please.
Joe's actually like putting a lot of time and effort into this, guys. He's writing you a personal letter every single week.
Yeah.
And it's good stuff. So check that out. Go to themeateater.com/fish and sign up for that. And then you just get a letter from Joe every Tuesday in your inbox. It's magical. Okay, so I think that's all the housekeeping, which brings us to the reason why we're here doing some fish news. As a reminder, this is a competition. Joe and I do not know what stories the other one is bringing to the table, and we are competing for the affection, the respect, the love, dare I say, of our brilliant and successful engineer, Phil, who will at the end of this determine who is the winner and who is going to cry just like Joe did at the end of that pickerel episode. This week, Joe gets to start it off, and so I will cede the floor to you, sir.
Well, yeah, so maybe this is some future B-side fodder. I don't know. For a lot of you, this won't be news, and I know this because you're DMing me incessantly about it. But in case you live near me in the southeastern Pennsylvania region and are not aware, we're having a Brood X cicada hatch this year, per science.
Science tells us this.
It will be so. Exactly. And right now, there are dozens, maybe hundreds of you tugging at your Brood X t-shirt, just going, "Brood X! Brood X! Brood X!" So you might have also noticed that like on Insta and YouTube right now, all the tires are carving foam and stacking hair in preparation of this event. And so we're clear, I'm not making fun of the hatch because I'm told it's something to behold. I've never experienced it personally. I just love the anticipation and the name Brood X, I find so perfectly like bro bra, even though they aren't the people that named it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds like kind of like an energy drink. Anyway, it's a fascinating deal, though, and there was a big story about it on the website of CBS Pittsburgh. This is from the story, "The bugs have been lurking beneath the surface since 2004, feeding on sap from the roots of plants, according to Michael J. Ropp, emeritus professor of entomology at the University of Maryland. Once they're mature, the big brood will emerge in 15 states where they'll spend 2 to 4 weeks in late May and early June courting, mating, flying, driving people crazy, being eaten by everything, including humans like Rob." So apparently this dude actually eats the cicadas as much as the fish. So these things have been underground here since 2004, and they only hatch once every 17 years. And like I said, while I've never experienced it, I've seen plenty of video, and it's nuts, particularly if you like to fly fish for carp. I'm sure you've seen some of those videos kicking around.
Yeah.
Because they get stupid on them. And even though a carp might pass up a lone bug at a different time of year, they get so keyed into this insane amount of protein on the surface, they go ballistic. And what I think is cool about this hatch is that it's not really trout-centric. You know what I mean? Like, sure, you can catch a big old wild brown during the Brood X hatch, But this is like the bass fly guy's hatch. And yeah. it's essentially like a popper hatch. You know, like the trout dudes are always trying to go dainty to match olives and all this stuff. And like you want a cicada fly to splat and then you can literally chug it across the surface. Still water, moving water, doesn't matter. And that's just badass. So it's like the ultimate terrestrial hatch. And they interviewed George Daniel in the piece. I don't know if you know George at all or know of George Daniel.
Nope.
But he's an East Coast guy, great guy, written a lot of books, very knowledgeable angler. And he had some interesting stuff to say about this hatch. And as I mentioned, whenever Brood X pops up anywhere in the country, you see people pimping these incredibly elaborate patterns, beautifully carved and stacked foam. It's all like epoxied over and shiny with mesh wings and big bug eyes and spun hair in the works. And George is basically like, yeah, but when it's on, like you're going to lose a lot of bugs and break off big carp and stuff. So be practical. And they link to a video that he put together where he recommends three patterns, one of which is just a chubby Chernobyl, like no big deal, just practical chubby Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And then one is just essentially a larger version of a very simple foam beetle. And the last one plays off that, and he actually puts some lead wraps on the shank because he says often a cicada riding just under the surface gets bit faster, especially in the peak of the hatch when you have lots of people out there slapping down these big bugs. So I thought that was just a very practical approach. Like it's sort of like I know we try to get all artistic with these crazy cicada bugs, but you know he makes a good point. You're hooking a lot of big fish, tie simple bugs. And I'm excited about this too. However, I think the one aspect people don't consider is that like with many hatches, this is often like a drop everything and go deal. You know what I mean? Like the best case scenario is that you live a stone's throw from good carpy or bassy water and can just haul ass to get there. Because even in the story, they note that it takes time because it's not really on until they're mating and dying. And it can be gonzo for weeks or days. You just don't know. But, like many hatches, it's just really hard to nail. They can't just be in the trees. Like you'll hear them in the trees. You know that's a good sign, but they got to be in the water. So you got to hit it just right. And I hope all of you that want that action get it. I'd love to say I'm going to make an effort, but with my schedule, like it'll be July in 10 minutes and I'll never have gotten there. Or I'll get the call that it's on right now this minute, which likely will not do me any good, but you know, a boy can dream. So good luck, everybody. Brood X. In the Eastern PA region.
This fits because we were just talking about this literally in the last segment when we were talking about the hex hatch.
Yep.
With the awkward moments that we just did. And I like I just said, I am skeptical of these super hyped hatches. And I think this fits into that, you know, like people are talking about it a lot. So it could be great. And if you happen to be there on the days that it's great, I'm sure it's a ton of fun. But the idea of chasing a hatch to me, my advice to everybody out there is don't do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what people have in their heads. This is so hyped in the news and fishermen are talking about it and the tires are talking about it that it's like for a month straight, every day, all the water is just going to be blanketed with these things and the fish are going to be going absolutely ballistic. And I don't think that's the way it goes down. You know what I mean? I think there's a couple windows within the span of when they're going. And if you're there, you're there. And if you've got cicada flies, good for you. But, you know, you probably need to have a lot of time to devote to get out there to do it.
What I want to know, and here's what I hope you'll find out for me, is this the one and only time when the Rebel Crick Hopper will actually catch a fish?
That was so well played. That was so well played.
I have tried and tried.
I want to believe. I've done the diving model. I've done the popper model. It has just never been. Now, somebody
never.
Is, like they are drafting the pissed off email right now. But
whatever.
I am
be pissed
you.
Off at me. I've never seen one catch a fish. Ever.
Somebody must catch something with them. They've been making them for 40 years or whatever it's
been. I guess they do. I don't know. But I don't know.
Probably. That would actually probably be a good – you know what? I don't have time to tie cicada flies. I will throw one crick hopper popper in my fly box and send it on a 7-weight if I just happen to be there. Guaranteed
it
gets smoked.
Yeah, please do, because I would love to see that happen. I'm going to move from big bugs to big fish with this story. On April 14th, Captain Justin Drummond and angler Troy Lancaster, along with a whole crew, broke the Texas state bluefin tuna record with a fish that was officially weighed at 876 pounds.
Ooh, that's a big one. That's a big one.
The 64-foot qualified, which is the name of the boat, left Port Aransas with basically just going out on an offshore trip. They had a window of good weather for a couple days, so they wanted to go way offshore and target. I mean, really, it was a group of guys who've done this trip together a lot of years running, and they usually get into marlin, and they get into yellowfin, and there's a chance at bluefin. But it wasn't like they were out there like, I'm going for a giant bluefin. That wasn't the goal. They were just going offshore because they had a weather window, and they figured it'd be good. But the bluefin do show up in the Gulf every spring. They're there.
Yep.
And so these guys went out. They went on a big run, went all the way out to the open ocean rigs. The qualified ran, I think, 150 miles.
That makes sense. I was going to say, because I know they're in the Gulf, but you hear about them more out of Western Florida and Louisiana. Like, you don't hear much about Texas boats running into them. So,
them boys
dropped the throttle and went for it.
They did. They went a long ways out, and I guess they actually stopped somewhere along the line at a drop earlier, didn't get anything, kept going through the night, got out about 150 miles, set up, got going before dawn, and it was kind of on, like, as soon as they started fishing. Mm-hmm. They caught some skipjack for bait, and, like, right off the bat just got into big bites. They had three big bites right off the bat. They broke off one blue marlin that they saw jump right behind the boat that mm-hmm. they estimated about 500 pounds. And then just after 9 a.m., they had another blow up, and they didn't see it, but this thing just dug, and they knew it was something big.
Can I ask, are they trolling live skipjack? Is that what they're doing? Yeah. Yep. Okay.
That turned out to be a massive tuna. Now, when it comes to fighting tuna, Hemingway once wrote about tuna fishing for the Toronto Star Weekly, and this is a quote. Hemingway said, "It is a back-sickening, sinew-straining, man-sized job, even with a rod that looks like a hoe handle. But if you land a big tuna after a six-hour fight, fight him man against fish until your muscles are nauseated with the unceasing strain, and finally bring him up alongside the boat, blue-green and silver in the lazy ocean, you will be purified, and you will be able to enter, unabashed, into the presence of the very elder gods, and they will make you welcome." Now, if that doesn't describe, say what you will about Hemingway, my friend, but if that's not like a passage about fighting a big tuna, maybe the best one ever written, I don't know what is.
I have caught a lot of bluefin, and I've never felt quite that way. That was beautiful. I'm just like, oh, I'm tired. Get me a beer, Jason. Jason, get me a beer.
and in the wake of that, I'm not totally sure what level of enlightenment Troy Lancaster, the angler, achieved after fighting his record fish, but his fight did not go on for 6 hours. It went on for 9 hours. Just after 6 p.m., the crew had the fish landed and began the long run back to Port A, where the Waymaster was waiting when they arrived well after midnight. Now, breaking the Texas bluefin record seems to be a trend, because April, a crew out of Galveston landed an 820-pounder, which would have beaten the 808-pound record set in 1985 had it been weighed on a certified scale. Unfortunately, there's some issues with that one last year, and it was thrown out. This most recent catch, however, will stand, beating the previous mark by nearly 70 pounds. And it's a remarkable fish. It's a great fish. Oh. But breaking the state record 2 years running strikes me as even more newsworthy than the fish itself, because it hints at a broader story around this fishery and these fish. Mm-hmm. Atlantic bluefin have been the poster child for overfishing for like my whole life.
Yeah.
Right? They're massive, right? So they're huge size, and the dramatic population decline that we've witnessed, combined with the astronomical and kind of ridiculous price that prime bluefin can fetch at auction, has made them this obvious focal point, this sort of media frenzy in discussions about overfishing.
Yeah.
That's sort of what they've become. If you're going to talk about overfishing, you think of Atlantic bluefin. And there's a reason for that. In the 70s and the 80s, Atlantic bluefin stocks dropped by an estimated 80%. And so in the 90s, two organizations with just ridiculously long names, the North American Oceanic and Atmospheric Association and the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas, teamed up to oversee one of the most comprehensive fisheries management strategies on the planet. It included a variety of standard tools like seasonal closures and strict retention limits, but also came up with some unique strategies like the individual bluefin tuna quota program, which created economic incentives for commercial fishermen to minimize bluefin bycatch. NOAA also enacted longline gear restrictions in the Gulf of Mexico that curtailed bluefin bycatch by 70%. Now, all that effort actually paid off. Bluefin stocks increased every year from 2004 to 2017. That year, ICCAT released a report recommending an increase in Western Atlantic bluefin harvest quotas. In 2019, the total bluefin biomass for this population had increased by 60% from its lowest point, and NOAA released a statement declaring that U.S.-caught Atlantic bluefin tuna was now a sustainable food choice.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in the wake of the increased quotas and relaxed regulations over the past 3 years, those stock numbers look like they might be starting to dip again.
Yep.
One study estimates that Atlantic bluefin stocks have fallen by nearly 30% since 2017. All this is to say that bluefin aren't like the third rail, totally unsustainable fishery that they once were. They're actually a positive recovery story, despite what most people know. But like, it's still tenuous. And,
sure.
And their future is uncertain. Now, Western Atlantic bluefin migrate from the Gulf of Mexico all the way up past you, up mm-hmm. the eastern seaboard to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So the big fish that are kind of famous around Newfoundland are the exact same ones caught off the coast of Texas.
Yep.
Bluefin spawn in the Gulf and then head north to chow on herring and mackerel and all the other food fish you guys have out there. The fact that the Texas record has been broken 2 years in a row strikes me as a testament to the success of decades of recovery efforts. Regardless of where we are right now, these big spawning size fish take decades to grow. So the one that Lancaster caught was allowed to reach that size in large part due to intense and impressive bluefin management. The recreational harvest quota in the Gulf is just a few thousand pounds every year. So once four or five big fish get caught, the whole season just shuts down from
yep.
Florida all the way to Texas.
Yep. Yep. It's like a rolling target. Yeah.
Yep. According to an interview that Troy Lancaster did, the angler did with our own buddy, Sam Lundgren, Lancaster didn't have a choice about whether or not he should harvest that particular fish. During the fight, it got tail wrapped,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the tail wrapped up in the line, and tuna can't breathe unless they're swimming forward. So once it got tangled, it suffocated. And unlike some other kinds of fish, anyway, tuna aren't buoyant. So for the last 2 hours of that fight, Lancaster was just lifting dead weight from 1,000 feet down. Like, yeah. I heard the story on this. They'd had the drag on that reel maxed out at 50 pounds, and they'd run the boat forward to lift the fish up a little, mm-hmm. and then back down on it as fast as they could and, like, crank in a little bit of line,
yep.
and then run forward and then back down on it. It sounded just
brutal.
Awful.
That's brutal. Yeah.
Just
that's
awful. It's
almost worse than fighting it the right way forward.
Totally
instead of
way
back.
Worse. And then 9 hour, like 7 hour normal fight, 2 hours of lifting dead weight. They finally get it to the transom. It took another hour and a half to actually drag the thing on board. Quote from Lancaster here. We had seven guys on board and one of them wasn't worth a shit. And that was me. Cause the dude had just been fighting this fish for 9 hours.
I appreciate that. Well, I'm always really fascinated by big bluefin caught in the Gulf. It's one of those things that, like, that fish is so, so synonymous with the Northeast that you forget that that is where they end up. And they have the Southern guys have a chance at these giant bluefins. They also have gigantic Mako sharks in the Gulf. And Mako yep. is such like a Northeast fishery too. But those dudes down there have them way bigger. So it's, I always think this is incredibly cool. But there are actually other fisheries along that route, like one of the real famous ones that I think actually also goes back to Hemingway days. They used to have a huge tournament in Bimini when those fish mm-hmm. were passing through.
Yep.
And like the game was you wanted it to be like shit, nasty, rough, and they would like spot them coming through the crests of the swells and like feed them a ballyhoo in the waves. And that went on for decades. And I don't think that really happens anymore, or you can't target them because they're not in season now when it's happening. But yeah, man, I mean, Bluefin was a great success. Now they could be in trouble again. There's also, I believe they found out that there was mixing of the Eastern and Western Atlantic stocks. Yep. So for years they thought, well, let the Italians or whoever take as many as they want. It's not affecting our fish. Actually, that was wrong. There's proof that there's some mixing of the species. You know, they're over there with the gabagool and the tunas. But it's tough, man. I love bluefin fishing, and I don't believe it's been changed or altered again. But for this year, right now, it's like it's one fish per boat in Jersey. And yep. I think it has to be at least 28 inches, 28 to 44, 47. I don't quote me on that, but it's irrelevant because they've been pretty abundant the last few seasons, the smaller size fish, the poppin' size fish. But I mean, you think about it from a chartering perspective. You know, you got a $2,000 tuna charter, you're breaking up with your boys. Not a whole lot of incentive to throw that kind of money out to go out and bring one. Like, what do you do then when you catch the 28-incher on the first pass? It's like,
and we're done.
Get a bigger one, or do you keep that one? So I want to see those fish thrive because I love chasing them, but I got to be honest, man. Like, I am... You know me, I'm not a meat fisherman, but I'm a glutton for tuna. Like when I make the effort to go tuna fishing, I want all the tuna. I want my three yellowfin. I want them all because I don't know when I'm going to get there again. So it's tough, man. And when you do catch and release tuna, they fight themselves to death. You know what I mean? Yep. Like they exhaust themselves. So you got to put some faith in science. You want these fish to be around. But from a recreational perspective, those regs right now, it makes you kind of question burning that kind of fuel to go out there and catch one, you know?
They're so pretty tight, and I understand the questioning, but if you look at the numbers, the recreational fishery, I think I read, is worth something like, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Many millions of dollars is mm-hmm. what I'm going to say, because I read this earlier and I've read too many things, but despite the fact of what you say, that you don't know if it's worth it or not, a lot of people think it is enough that they're willing to spend the money, even with the what some would call draconian regulations on fishing them these last few decades.
Oh yeah, dude. I say that because I'm lucky enough to have enough people where it's a gas money trip. But I mean, you think about the guys who, you know, for a lot of people, they don't have that access. They're booking their big trip every year. I've been there not because of the regs, just because it was a slow day and you got five dudes on board and you got one 35-inch bluefin. It's like, well, I'll take the tail, I guess. You know what I mean? Like there's not good divvying. The divvying is very depressing. You know what I'm saying? It's very depressing divvying. So
five guys fighting over the belly.
So a lot of that bluefin, the big ones, I don't really know where it goes. I guess there's fancy enough sushi places that buy some of it in the States. I don't have enough money to eat at them. But you might find one at a casino, which is going to lead into my next story.
Hmm.
Okay? So, not super fishing related per se, but I found this interesting nonetheless. And the main message of this story is that everything is smart now and just keeps getting smarter. And we're talking about things that in many cases probably didn't even really need to be smart. Like as an example, they are smart fishing rods now that connect to your phone and tell you the weather and how many times you've casted and so on. And many of you guys probably have smart smokers and crock pots and so on and so forth. And this is posing a growing problem in the world of cybersecurity because it wasn't that long ago that all this sector really had to focus on were IT assets like servers and workstations. Now, of course, we have to worry about cybersecurity on our phones and laptops. But the reality is if it connects to the internet, even if it's just your smart bobber or your smart gaff or whatever, it can potentially be hacked into and used to get into your larger system, like your larger files. And this is exactly what happened at a North American casino not long ago. Now, the article on the website entrepreneur.com that I found does not name the casino, but this casino featured huge fish tanks on the casino floor. And of course, nobody wants to, you know, sit there and yank on a slot machine and look at dead fish because that's a buzzkill. So every aspect of these tanks were made smart so they could be monitored by the casino's network from behind the scenes. And hackers ended up getting a hold of the casino's database of high rollers by breaking into the system through the fish tank's thermometers.
What?
Yes, right? So the weak point in the system that they could hack into and then get what they needed, they hacked into the smart thermometers in the casino's gigantic fish tanks. And whenever I hear anything about someone trying to get one over on a casino, for whatever reason, what comes to mind is Funny Farm. Do you know what I'm talking about? Chevy Chase's terrible
novel. I remember that
novel.
Movie, but I don't remember the scene you're talking about.
You don't remember the scene where he makes the wife read the novel and then he ends up burning it?
Yeah, four poker buddies knocking over a casino. The perfect crime?
Anyway, from the story, per Nicole Egan, who is from the security firm Darktrace, the attackers used a fish tank thermometer to get a foothold in the network. They then found the high roller database and then pulled that information out of the mainframe, back into the thermostat in the tank, and then from the thermostat, uploaded it to their cloud. So I did a little background digging, and the breach actually, this is a new article, but the breach happened last summer, and the hackers were able to pull 10 gigs of data through the fish tank thermostat to a device in Finland. One of the reports that came out around the time of the breach said some pretty scary shit. And one area that is super smart these days is kids' toys. And the FBI has actually warned parents that like a smart teddy bear that reads stories or like your Fisher-Price tablet connected to your Wi-Fi could potentially be used to help hackers like learn the names and locations of your kids. So everything becoming smart has drawbacks. It's awful. But it's also important to note that like the cybersecurity sector is working very hard to keep up with that. So like this fish tank incident helps them stop that like from ever happening again. So that industry is adapting as things are being made smarter and smarter. But I mean, I know there are hundreds of you listening that have that smart rod. So bear in mind, like those could be hacked and someone could learn that the last 400 pictures you put on Instagram were all taken at the same spillway and you will be outed. So keep that in mind. But that's how they got in, the fish tank. Weird story.
How am I supposed to transition out of that into anything?
I don't know.
I'm screwing up your transition game.
Phil counts the transitions.
I think this is just a ploy. You're like, I don't have a good story, but I'm going to screw him over. So you know what? I don't have a good story either. So I'm going to move from your stupid story that has nothing to do with fishing to my stupid story that has slightly more to do with fishing. And yeah, look, I know this is a cheesy story and kind of dumb, but after reading about it, and then I fell into this video watching hole after I found the story, and I couldn't stop. It was mesmerizing. And I'm sure any listeners we have in the Madison, Wisconsin area are well aware of what I'm about to talk about, because it's clearly the local news is all over it. I don't think there's much else to talk about in Madison right now, or at least nothing positive. So they're all covering the same thing. But if you are in that area and you haven't already heard about it, you should know, because you might still have time to check out some flying muskies if you hurry. Every spring, muskies migrate out of Lake Monona in downtown Madison and up the Winger Creek, where they run into a 3-foot-tall dam. And there, the big esox all congregate and mill around in the pool below the dam. And then just like sockeye salmon, they throw themselves into the air and leap over the concrete impediment to reach the warmer water of Lake Wingra. So it's just like all those salmon videos you've seen, except with muskies.
I was going to say, Wisconsin, you don't have postcards with this on them? Like, this seems like the kind of thing. Like, what are you doing? Capitalize.
I had no idea. Muskies are not quite as acrobatic aerially when not hooked as the salmon. They're not quite as smooth about it.
A little awkward when
there's some awkward failures, which makes it even more endearing to me. But they do make it over sometimes, but a lot of the times they don't. And clearly this is something that people know about and they're into. I'd never heard of it. You hadn't heard of it. It must be a local thing. And I couldn't completely tell, but it seems like there's a viewing platform where people can really just hang out. Yeah, dude.
And there's no t-shirts.
It wasn't reported. No t-shirts reported, but I think there's a gold mine opportunity for anybody, again, in that area. Get out there and sell
somebody
you some flying
Madison,
musky shirts.
If there's stickers or something of this, we'll trade you bent stickers for like a pack of like whatever they are. I watched the jumping muskies of Madison.
I'm so glad you feel the same way about this as I do, because all I can think is this is like a perfect springtime activity if you're not actually going to go fishing, right?
You
load up the whole family and go like, let's go watch some flying musky kids, and the kids are going to be annoyed. But if you get them a hot dog and a t-shirt, they're probably into it. So I loved everything about this. And again, I spent more time than I should have when I was working watching flying musky videos. And then I read further into the story. And what had felt like a heartwarming family fun tale, it started to go a little south, if I'm being honest. Because it turns out, like, all those muskie are going over that dam so they can get to the warmer lake upstream to spawn. And it turns out that the contaminants in Lake Wingra prevent muskie eggs from actually hatching. And the DNR has no recorded evidence of natural fish recruitment in that system.
So they jump the dam and then nothing happens when they get there. Yeah, they can't reproduce.
They do all they go through all that work. They swim up the creek. They hit the dam. They fly over it, and it's utterly futile.
How many years has this been going on? Like, wouldn't the fish in the system like have their genetics sorted out by now to know that like that's not going to work out?
Well, you know they're what I mean? All hatchery fish. There's no natural recruitment in the system. They're all hatchery fish.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes the t-shirts a little sadder, but I would still
I'd still buy one.
I'd still enjoy having one. Well, I don't know. I think you got this one. I don't know for sure, but giant tuna jumping monkeys beats cicadas and casino heist. So
you hear that, Phil? He's just rolling over and giving it to me. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. Phil surprises us sometimes, though. So we're going to hear from Phil, and then we're going to move on to Covering Water with a gentleman a lot of you probably are aware of, former dude behind Barstool Outdoors, Ben Friedman, but he's better known by another name.
Although stupid stories that have nothing to do with fishing usually appeal to me, you guys called it already. Miles, you're the winner this week. Joe, I do think, however, that your fish thermostat casino heist story could be the next exciting addition to the Ocean's movie franchise. I mean, the water pun is already there, so the movie practically writes itself.
And you're gonna need a crew as nuts as you are. Who do you got in mind?
Joe Cirelli.
I'm Miles Nolte.
This is River Horse coming to you.
This is Stripe a Chunk and Expert Bob the Garbage Man Bertana Nananuski.
What's up, asswipes? It's me, your boy, Lance V.
You proved your point. You broke into my vault. Congratulations. You're a dead man.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I can hold it.
Pull up!
No, I'm all right. Pull up!
All right, so joining us today for Covering Water, we have got Mr. Ben Friedman. However, most people are going to know you by a different name, which would be, tell us what they'd know you by.
I guess Young Page Views. I don't know. The last time I was on a Meteor podcast, it's kind of the same situation where Steve was looking at me like, what the hell does that mean? So, YP, I guess. I don't know.
YP, yes. So Young Page Views YP, and you were the guy, you like kicked off and grew Barstool Outdoors. That was your gig, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. From this brain, one of the only things this brain's ever really developed up in here other than thinking about fish. I guess it's still related to fish, but yeah.
So
yes, sir.
We've
seen some evidence there's some other things that came out of that brain.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that too. So people know you as Young Page Views, and I just have to add, famously, when you interviewed for Barstool, what did you bring to the office? A wallaby or something like that? A live animal?
Yes, it was an albino wallaby named Winston, I believe his name was. And honestly, our paths have never crossed since. And I sometimes sit and wonder what Winston is doing out there, probably hopping around a pasture.
Hold on. Where did you get a line on an albino wallaby? Like, how did that come about?
Honestly, I think I got it luckier than I realized because I have since looked for them for other reasons. Believe it or not, I have tried to procure a wallaby again, and it was way harder the second time. So I guess I got lucky the first time, but it was. I think I found it online. It was some lady had like a farm
on Craigslist wallaby.
No, it was in New York. I think I was looking up exotic animal things because I was looking for a tiger and the tiger was too much money. So I was like, had to go to plan B.
Don't you hate that when the tiger's too much money? Like you have your heart set on a tiger. Yeah.
I was so sad because in my mind, I'm like, what a great idea. I'll just get a tiger and then I'll walk in. And then it turns out you have to get permits to bring a freaking Bengal tiger in New York City.
Yeah. They're sticklers about that.
So annoying.
But here's why I asked, though. I brought it up because did you know that there is a wallaby on Instagram called Young Pouch Views, which appears to be named after you?
From Grant's Farm in St. Louis. That's another wallaby that I went to visit when it was a baby and they were naming it. And then it was called Young Pouch Views, but then I honestly have been kind of a deadbeat dad. I got to go back and check on that wall. I'm going to say it right now, hand up. I've not gone back, and it feels horrible to say out loud. I've not gone back and played with it since that first time.
In some states, you can't get a fishing license if you don't pay your wallaby support. So you got to watch that.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm going to...
But anyway, man, so you put out content for a lot of years for Barstool, and you know a lot of your fishing content, I noticed there was like sort of like a little bit of a Jackass element to what you did too. Like you did a lot of videos of you like in precarious situations or doing painful things, right?
Yeah, a lot of it looked uncomfortable.
Yes. Frankly.
Sometimes I'd just stand there and get bit by like three pythons. And like honestly, it was kind of fun because once I started getting bit by more and more stuff, I realized I'm like, a lot of this stuff is overhyped. You know what I mean? Like a python, I've gotten hooks in my finger 50 million times more painful than getting bit by a python 30 times in a row. And it was fun to almost like dispel that weird fear that people have, if that makes sense. I don't know. That's like the most trying to make it more than a eulogy of getting bit by a python. I guess it was for a bigger reason.
Okay, so I asked you about all these videos where you're in uncomfortable situations because there may be a question or two tied to them in covering water. And to explain how that works, here's what we do. So I'm going to put 2 minutes on the clock on my cell phone, and we are just going to pepper you with questions. And this
rapid
is different
fire.
From your rapid fire. So instead of doing like a formal, like well thought out interview, you have just seconds to answer each one because the clock is ticking. Okay.
You can't think about it.
We can't think too much, and we've never had anybody pass. I mean, I don't think there's a rule, but like, you know, but then what we'll do is at the end of your 2 minutes, we'll give you a full minute to expand on any one of your answers. So like we always say, whichever one you think is the most damning, like which is the one that you're like, oh shit, I should not have said that. We'll give you a whole minute to undo what you've done.
You get to save. It's a career saver. After you've like dug a hole, you can fill it back in a little bit.
That's basically what we're going to do.
Well, usually less thinking is better for me. So rapid fire could be to my advantage.
All right. So Miles, are your questions ready?
I'm ready to go.
All right. Here we go. Ben, are you ready? For this.
As ready as I could be. I don't know. I may not be, but this is hopefully I'm ready.
Okay, Miles, I'll lead. I'll start. All okay. Right. And 2 minutes are on the clock starting now. Your childhood fishing idol was?
Say Mike Iaconelli and my grandpa. I got to throw him in there as well.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Have you ever had long hair?
Never longer, like maybe to the top of my ears, but that's it.
If you could fish with any celebrity living or dead, who would it be?
Honestly, Drake. This is a weird one. I'll explain it in my minute after. That's the recording artist, Aubrey Graham.
Okay.
What's the most underrated fishing state?
Ooh. I'm going to say Missouri, hometown. I think it doesn't get enough credit. I think it's very fun.
What's the most expensive pair of sneakers you own?
Did I have to buy them? My mom one time helped me get these Nikes for my birthday that were called like the Pocket Knife DM or something. They were like $209. And they're like camo colored with orange bottoms. Pretty cool.
Gangster rap or outlaw country?
Probably gangster rap, to be honest.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Which is the most fun to target, snakeheads, peacock bass, or clown knife fish?
Honestly, I'm in love with clown knife fish right now. That's subject to change, but my answer is clown knife fish.
Meps, Vibrax, Panther Martin, or Rooster Tail?
Rooster Tail.
What's worse, getting stung by a man-o-war jellyfish or bitten by a python?
The man-o-war is definitely worse because it lasts longer. It lasts for like hours.
Sketchiest spot you've ever gone fishing?
A few days ago down here in South Florida, the guy with a machete was walking by me in one of these canals. And I think any of the canals in South Florida are the scariest places I've ever gone fishing.
What's the worst place you've ever been hooked?
Ooh, I would say, you know, it's one of two places, either down near the gonads in the leg that could have been bad, or I'd say like up here in the upper face region where it's, luckily, fingers crossed, neither one has been a direct hit yet, but I'd say one of those two.
All right, finish this sentence. Most fishermen are...
just drinking.
Okay, we got time for one more each here. What was the last CD you purchased? Not album you downloaded, CD you purchased.
Probably Jimmy Buffett, Greatest Hits. It was like an all-encompassing double disc, 40 songs.
at the register at the Costco. All right, Miles, you got time for one more.
Ooh, I get one more?
Yeah.
Okay, would you rather be a rapper or a tournament bass angler?
Oh, am I going to be a champion of either one?
Yes.
I feel like probably tournament bass angler, but I don't know. There might be more money in the music industry. So
definitely more money in the music industry.
We are out of time. Fishes. And listen, we didn't talk about it up front, but there were several rap questions in here because for people who don't know, right before you were in the outdoor industry, right, you were making a play to be a rapper. Like, we've listened to your songs. I actually find them catchy. We sure have. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, man. I got to scrub those off the internet. My PR team.
No, don't do that. But, like, so the rap dream kind of not, you're not dreaming it anymore?
Never say die. You never know. You know what I mean? Who knows? But, I mean, it's certainly lost some steam in the past couple years, for sure.
Can you freestyle right now?
No, I'm out of that. I'm never freestyle game. Listen, a lot of people that are good at rapping may be good at freestyling. I would be the guy that it would take like a week to write a song, and then I'd have to record it like 50,000 times in the studio to be able to make it like a three-minute thing.
Because we're so into music, we couldn't not bring up the rap career. So anyway, I am going to put 1 minute on the clock and feel free to expand on any one of your answers that you feel you'd like everybody to know more about. Time starts now.
I would say the one that has really just been in my mind for a while, when it says one celebrity like living or dead, there was a time, I forgot, like last year, a couple years ago, I was sitting there and I just had wondered if, you know, the rapper named Drake is probably the biggest dude in the entire industry right now as far as pop music, anything. He's a star. But I couldn't find any evidence of him fishing ever. And for some reason, it may be something with my weird personality, whatever is in my brain that caused me to be so screwed up. I became obsessed with trying to figure out if he's ever just gone fishing one time. And this guy, you got to think of a super famous celebrity. Their life's been documented for a decade and some time now. There's no evidence of him ever going fishing one time. Not a picture, not an account, not anything. And I'm starting to think this grown man who's worth, you know, a couple $100 million has never caught a fish. And for some reason, it's like one of my missions in life to just, I want to be the dude that takes him to go fishing because I feel like he doesn't have that joy in his life. Money and women and success. He's never caught a fish. I'm not dissing him. It seems like something every human should have as part of their experience on Earth, and I just don't think he's done it. So I don't know why. I want to take him fishing.
Well, I'm sure Drake's listening to this show, so I'm like 80% positive this is going to happen for you now.
Are you going to slip him a demo tape? Like, just maybe? Because you never know, right?
You know what? I didn't even think of that part. This could be my roundabout way. The dream could still be alive. I need to somehow get him to go fishing with me. And then maybe even just have enough fun that he comes back and then I'll be like, hey, I'll pick you up and I'll just be playing it in the car.
I think there's a lesson in there.
Is there?
I think
tell.
So.
Do tell.
Here's what I distilled from that. Albino wallabies ruin rap careers every time. If you ever find yourself walking into a Manhattan office cradling an albino wallaby, your future as a rap artist is over, and I dare you to prove me wrong with evidence on that one.
Well, isn't that what made DMX go out? Something with an albino wallaby? I don't know. You're probably right. I appreciate a lot of rap. I'm not like a huge rap fan. But say what you want about YP songs. There were a couple of hooks that stuck with me. Like there were a couple, like I found myself just like muttering them in the car. I'm like, wow, man, that like was a good hook. I also feel like we're doing our audience and him a disservice if we don't at least give you a little taste, just like a little bit, right? So here's YP spitting a little hot fire.
I'm really young, page views. Wake up, make this content till it's morning night. Just might take your lunch and eat it in one bite. Cameras, 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 give me all the footage. I might go Facebook Live, cut cold, you smash your woman. Power hour, take.
And now that you know what's been playing in Joe's head on repeat for the last 6 months.
On my iPod Classic.
That concludes our cosmetology masterclass for this week. But as you're sweeping up, note the ragged clumps of wisdom we left behind. Long-haired peanut butter sandwich smugglers should not travel internationally with rod tubes. Fish flies like to get freaky in ZZ Top beards, and snake fangs hurt less than fish hooks embedded in fingers, at least according to that one source.
That is correct. Hey, also, please keep sending mail to bent@themeateater.com. We want your awkward photos, bar nominations, sale bin items, fish news suggestions, and general sentiments about life, the universe, and everything.
Yes, we do. We also love to see what you're tagging with the Degenerate Angler and Bent Podcast hashtags. Keep us up to date on the important things in your life. And until next time, so long, and thanks for all the fish.